Joe Arpaio liked to call himself America's toughest sheriff, and for more than two decades, his many supporters cheered on the Maricopa County Sheriff's hardline approach to immigration in the state of Arizona. Arpaio carried out workplace raids, conducted sweeps in Latino neighborhoods. U.S. citizens said they were being racially profiled, and a federal judge agreed. But even as Arpaio's legal troubles mounted, his tactics didn't stop. He even set the stage for Donald Trump, whose stance on immigration helped carry him to the White House. A new book charts the rise and fall of one of the most controversial sheriffs in modern memory. It's called Driving While Brown, Sheriff Arpaio versus the Latino Resistance. Journalist Jude Joffe Block co-wrote the book, and she joins us now. Jude, welcome. It's great to speak with you.
Great to speak with you, Peter.
So Arpaio is no doubt, you know, very famous, but a lot of people only heard about him once he was well into his 60s and 70s. What can you tell us about his early years and how they kind of turned him into the guy who would eventually become known as America's toughest sheriff?
Yeah, it's interesting because most people can't name their own sheriff, let alone somebody else's sheriff in another county. Yet Joe Arpaio was nationally known within a few years of his tenure. He was elected in 1992. He was there for 24 years. And the first half of his tenure, he was famous for making his inmates wear pink underwear, making his inmates sleep in outdoor tents and eat unpleasant food. Those kinds of antics really made his brand, and he was really a master at getting media attention.
But was he always a firebrand on the issue of immigration?
He wasn't. So for the first half of his career, the immigration issue was something he actually even said he wasn't going to waste time focusing on undocumented workers. And then what happened was in Arizona, there started to be a movement of people who were concerned about unauthorized immigration. There was an uptick of people attempting to cross the Arizona border from Mexico. And with it came a building movement to restrict and punish people who were attempting to enter the state. And so as the politics of the state shifted, state lawmakers started to pass laws to criminalize people who were smuggling people into the state, to make that a state felony. Arpaio wound up enthusiastically enforcing that law and actually applying it to migrants who were in the cars and arresting them on felony charges for attempting to smuggle themselves. And that happened in 2006, and it really is the start of his pivot towards immigration enforcement, which made him nationally known. It allowed him to raise money for his elections from national donors.
That's interesting. So as the politics intensified, his tactics intensified along with it. His legal troubles also start to mount. He was accused in those years of racial profiling. You write about this in the book. A federal judge eventually found him in contempt of court for ignoring orders to stop racial profiling. He was infamous for his workplace raids around the county. Can you just describe the types of things that the sheriff's department ended up doing that were so controversial and illegal?
Yeah, so he really began ramping up in 2007 with the help of a partnership from the federal government that he really used like no other law enforcement agency used. And so it started with rounding up day laborers, many of them who were immigrants who were looking for work. They would get picked up by sheriff's deputies and turned over to ICE for deportation. Then there were these dramatic neighborhood sweeps where his deputies would swarm neighborhoods and pull over any car for a minor traffic violation. And drivers and passengers started complaining that they were being questioned and asked for ID. And what would happen is that the deputies were on the lookout for undocumented immigrants and would arrest anyone who was suspected of being undocumented in those minor traffic violations. Then there were these worksite raids, which you mentioned, which were unauthorized immigrant workers who didn't have proper documentation, who were arrested on felony charges and jailed and then turned over to ICE for deportation. So tens of thousands of immigrants wound up in ICE custody as a result of Sheriff Arpaio's policies.
Okay, and that's what started to get the attention of a group of activists in the state, and they essentially made it their mission in life to try to get rid of Arpaio either through, you know, lawsuits or through the ballot box. What drove them? And in the early days, you know, was there a fear that their mere presence in this type of environment in the state would backfire on them.
The coalition of people who organized against Arpaio was really diverse. I mean, it involved people who were undocumented immigrants and people who were children of immigrants or who were Mexican-American with families who went back in Arizona generations. And I mean, not everyone in the movement was Latino, but we point out in the book that that it was a Latino-led effort. There were moments where people who were undocumented and at risk for deportation did come out of the shadows and join the movement to protest Arpaio, risking deportation by coming out in that way.
You know, in those days, you and I worked together at the member station KJZZ. This was when the racial profiling case was unfolding, and you were covering it, it seemed like every day at the time. And I remember that there was this sense that Arpaio, you know, much like Donald Trump, was invincible, that nothing could touch him. And I just wonder if you think that the activists felt that same way, you know, sort of secretly.
Yeah, I think that there was a lot of fear in the community about what it meant to go after him. And the people who were waging this fight for a time felt like it was a pretty lonely fight because it was hard to get people to join their coalition. Arpaio had a reputation for retaliation, something which he denies. But there's a pattern of him going after his perceived political enemies, and there were criminal investigations that were later thrown out against people who had gone up against him. And so there was a long period in Maricopa County where he was really untouchable. But I think it's also important to note that for some of the people who decided to wage this fight, they weren't at risk themselves. They were U.S. citizens, but they felt like the very principle of equality in America rested on waging this fight and bringing attention to this issue.
We do need to talk about Sheriff Arpaio's relationship with the former president, Donald Trump. Here he is introducing Trump at a campaign rally in Phoenix in 2016.
Now, Donald Trump wants to build a wall. A lot of people, you know, they're getting a little chicken these days. Well, who's going to pay for it? Okay? Now, quite frankly, I don't really care who pays for it. Let's get it built.
You know, Jude, in many ways, it feels like Arpaio was Trump before Trump was Trump, right? I mean, how much of an influence did the sheriff have on him and his policies?
One thing everyone agrees on any side of this issue, Arpaio, Arpaio's supporters, Arpaio's biggest opponents, they all agree that Arpaio is very similar to Trump. It's really undeniable. With Arpaio, he was one of the first people who endorsed Trump. And then Trump, of course, later pardoned Arpaio when he faced criminal contempt of court, guilty finding for violating court orders. Arpaio will tell you that he did not advise the president on immigration, but we do know that Arpaio showed the country how powerful of a political tool immigration enforcement could be. And I think that it's very likely that Trump took note of that potency.
The amazing thing, though, is that Arpaio lost in 2016. And that was the same year, of course, that Donald Trump swept to victory on many of those themes of immigration. So what was that like for the activists who'd fought Arpaio for so long?
Many were stunned because Arpaio lost by 13 points. It was a landslide. And keep in mind, this was after 24 years in office. I mean, this was a really big deal to defeat him after so long. And yet there was also this realization that at the federal level, they now had someone who wanted to threaten their family members or their own ability to stay in the country. And so there was a lot of mixed emotions. There was an understanding that the real work was ahead of how were you going to continue this organizing for immigrant rights in this new regime. And we actually saw that some of these Arizona activists who had been practicing with these issues for so long in Arizona started advising other groups around the country.
Yeah. Well, what about the future? I mean, Arpaio is almost 90 years old now. Trump, he's out of office, but he's hinting that he's going to run for president again. Of course, immigration totally back in the news, front and center. What do you think the next chapter in this story will be?
What we know from the Arizona lesson is that the issue of immigration can be incredibly politically powerful, and it can lead to policies that are popular but also could risk constitutional violations, as we saw happen in Maricopa County. And they can also fuel grassroots organizing that could change the political landscape. So it'll be interesting to see how this current scenario at the border translates into our national political debate.
Jude Joffe Block's new book is Driving While Brown, Sheriff Joe Arpaio versus the Latino Resistance. She co-wrote it with journalist Terry Green Sterling. Jude, very well-reported book. It was a pleasure to connect with you again and talk about it. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Peter. Great to talk with you.